Welcome to the Raising Grace podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. I am the mother of three children, and I do not know what I am doing. So I'm contacting regular parents just like you and I to help me find the best ways to help my kids and myself thrive. And maybe in the meantime, I can help you thrive as well. We aren't so different, you and I. With a little grace, we can do this. Today, I spoke with my friend, Amy Stanton. Amy is a wife, a business owner, and a very involved mother of three children. She shares with us her God story. Amy shouldn't be with us today, and neither should her youngest son. But they are here because of laundry and a reality TV show. You never know what's going to save your life one day. Maybe I should go fold that extra load. Three kids and like 12 pets, and you run a business from home, or you run your own business. And
yeah, I have an office. I don't work from home. So I have two offices, five employees. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And you're also a mom, and you volunteer with your kids stuff. Like, what other kids stuff do you do?
So I volunteer. I'm the committee, Cub Scout committee chair, which is, I'm in charge of the entire pack. 49 kids now, I think, and all their families and all the leaders, which are typically parents too, but, and just making sure things run smooth with that. I'm also the DAC liaison at my kid's school. And I don't know, I just also tote my kids to all their other activities that they have, which is a lot.
How do you balance all of that with your marriage and your business?
Yeah, marriage is hard sometimes.
No, I hadn't noticed. It's so hard.
I'm glad that we're both being real.
You want me to focus on my marriage too? Wow.
Yeah, I need time for you. I can't believe that. Why?
I know.
So, it's a juggling act for sure. Every day I'm like, I wake up with a sense of anxiety when you first wake up. Like, what am I forgetting? What is happening? What does the day look like? What is, like, yesterday I thought I had more time to work at my office, and things just kept piling up with like activities the kids had. And like this week's homecoming. So my oldest is in high school. So she just homecomings this week, and it's insane. It's every day of the week. There's something going on after school, and they have to get to and from it. And yesterday was a powder puff game, and it was like, who's taking you? Am I taking you, dropping you off? Oh, your brother has whatever. So I just juggle it, and I do the best I can. And I think that's what every mom needs to remember, is that we're all in this together. And as those people that have been through it tell us, one day we'll miss it. But
now, when you guys started having kids, were you planned to have kids? How long had you been married? What was your plan?
We dated for 5 years. I'm going to step back to that. I met Brendan when I was 19. We dated for 5 years. We got married when I was 24. We got married, and we both were like, we are oldest children. We're like, do we want kids? Do we not want kids? I don't know. Not yet. We waited 5 years, and we had Olivia. And I did, I was 29 when I had her. So about 28, I was like having dreams of being pregnant and having dreams of like having a baby. And all of a sudden it just hit me. And I was like, whoa, what is this? I want that. And Brian was like, wait, we were going to just like retire rich and like, we're going to have fun. And I'm like, nope, I want a baby. So anyway, we had her when I was 29. That was the start. And then we each have siblings. He's one of four, and I'm one of three. And we're like, we want siblings. We don't want our kid to be an only child. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just not, we just wanted that for our family. And so a couple years later, I was like, okay, time for another one. Let's have them 3 years apart. And then Neil and Tim, I had 2 years apart. That was a little crazy. And that one's a little crazier than.
Yeah, tell me what happened there, because this is one of the main reasons I'm talking to you, because this last pregnancy wasn't as you had expected it to be.
No, that was my God moment, if you can if you've ever had like the miracle moment in your life, this is the story that brought me to that and realized that there has to be a higher power for my situation. So, and really it's just about like how it all happened and how I found out and why I found out and that kind of thing. Like there should be no reason I figured this out.
Well, let's hear it. I'm excited. Okay. Let's hear the story.
I like to build it up. So I was just folding laundry on a Sunday night, getting ready for a Monday. I had a doctor's appointment on Tuesday scheduled for just a checkup. It was my husband's company would save us money if we went to the doctor once a year and did a full physical thing. And then we'd save $300 a year on premiums, which was great. And, you know, we were like, he was all about that $300. So I was always all about making sure I got that appointment for that. And, so I was folding laundry, watching 48 Hours Mystery. It was a show called Lena's Heart, and I'll never forget the title because it just really was what saved my life, I guess. So I was watching the show, and it was about a 34-year-old, and I happened to be 34. She had two toddlers, the same age as my toddlers, very parallel lives, both married, all that stuff. She went out with her girlfriends and had drinks, and she came home and she came home and he had been in bed. The kids were in bed. It was late. It was like a bachelorette party thing that she was going to. And so he had already put them to bed and went to bed himself. Didn't hear her come home. He woke up the next morning and he found her dead in the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So the story is that and whatever, but what ended up happening is he ended up going to jail for 6 months because of course the cops thought that he murdered his wife and it was like that kind of deal. And so basically the kids lost both their parents in one night. And that like really blew my mind. 6 months later, he went through a full court case and trial and everything else. He was found not guilty. The reason he was found not guilty is because he had five cardiologists that did testify for him, five different cardiologists that looked at her heart and determined that she had cardiac arrest and that she had a minor heart defect. Hers was a different situation than what I'm about to tell you about, but she had a minor heart defect where her like valve didn't feel right or something like that. And so they think she was just going into cardiac arrest and had a typical heart attack at 34 as a young mom and a healthy looking young mom. Well, she had symptoms that she would pass out all the time, or she was really tired all the time, or these kind of things were happening to her. She would tell her mother and tell her husband, but she didn't actually go see a doctor. And so there was nothing documented. So totally joking with my husband. When I was a kid, I was told I had a tiny heart murmur as a child. And nobody ever checked it too far because they felt like it was fine. And eventually it kind of went away and everything was normal-ish to their standards. They felt like I was fine. So I never really got it checked. Everything was normal. I was always a tired person. I did pass out all the time as a child and as an adult. So I was very lightheaded, but they always had an excuse for that too. And I had really low blood pressure. So they thought it was due to my low blood pressure. So, and I was always looked like I was in shape. I couldn't do exercise. I always had like asthma-ish symptoms where I'd get really out of breath and stuff. So I didn't do sports or anything like that, but I was always like in shape, skinny, had low blood pressure, all the signs that you would think everything was fine. But that night I joked with my husband and said, because I'm weird and I'm insurance and I always think of the worst thing. So I'm like, everything was so parallel. It just feels very like I should at least notate in my file that I had a heart murmur when I was a kid. And my exact words were to him, in case I drop dead tomorrow, I don't want you to go to jail and my kids lose both their parents. And he
really
thought I was
considerate of you.
Crazy. Yeah.
You're like, I'm helping.
Really, really more the kids. Like, so what?
Sorry,
the
kids. I don't want the parents to be, or the kids to be without.
I mean,
parents, this is
I don't want
I'm
you to go to jail either, but I'm also like, well, I don't want them to have no parents and who would take them? It's not like you don't have a will for your husband murdering you, you know, I don't know. So,
right.
There's, I don't know. where do the kids go after that? So anyway, so I went to the doctor on Tuesday. I told her my stupid story. My husband thought I was crazy. The doctor thought I was crazy and said, okay, well, you know, if I'm going to document this thing, you're telling me that you had a heart murmur. I don't hear it, but if I'm going to document that you had one when you were a kid, I at least need to do some like testing on you. So she said, I'll do a quick EKG. Then at least if I put it in your note, a note in your file, like I have justification for writing this in your file when I'm not hearing it at all. I said, great. I just want to make sure this doesn't happen. My husband doesn't end up going to jail. My kids losing their parents.
Yeah, she sounded like a lunatic. Oh, okay. That's great. That's great.
I did. I sounded like
a lunatic. And your doctor listened to you. She listened to you.
Yeah. And she was a PA. So I also want to say that I've been told by many in the medical world that PAs are very, like they're a lot more empathetic and very willing to do like another step sometimes where like maybe a doctor doesn't have the time or the bandwidth patience for adding weird scenarios to their life like I was coming up with. So I did sound crazy, but something in my head just kept telling me to ask these questions and like bring this up to her. Like I couldn't sleep since I watched the show, like from Sunday to Tuesday, I just had to tell her, and it was like on my brain when I woke up and it was on my brain when I went to bed. So anyway, she did a quick EKG, or she had the nurse do it or whatever. And then the nurse went out and grabbed her and gave her the report, and she came running back in and said, this tells me you're going to have a heart attack at any minute. And if I don't get you to a cardiologist, you need to see a cardiologist today. If you can't see one today, I'm going to admit you to Littleton Hospital.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
No, this is dead serious.
Unbelievable.
Yes. So she made all these calls, and I still have my EKG in my office, it's in a file cabinet in my office. I actually want to get a tattoo of it because anyone in the medical world would know that I had a messed up EKG. Like it was, when it went up, it went down instead of it. It was just like when it's supposed to go up, mine went down and it was off. It was totally not right. So she called around, she got me with a cardiologist that day at 2:00, which is kind of crazy because they're usually really busy and they're backed up. And it's like one of those things. So she got me into a cardiologist, it's called Cardiology Now. And it was just a place to go and do an echocardiogram, which is basically an ultrasound that we had on our babies, right? Like they're doing one on your baby, but they don't do the rest of your body. So you don't know all the other organs. Were you pregnant at the time? That's hold on, I'll get there.
We're not there yet.
So okay. Yeah. So I went to that cardiologist. I was also like, I walked in the door and I'm like, I don't have time for this. So I got 20 minutes and then I gotta go pick my kids up at preschool. So can you hurry this up? My joke has turned into a nightmare and I just don't believe any of this. Like I'm sorry I made this joke. Now I gotta deal with this repercussion, but I'm gonna like just tell you to hurry up because I'm sure everything's fine. She's wrong. Like I couldn't believe that little line thing that they do with the little patches on your chest really was telling me there was a problem. But so I walk in, he looks at me, puts the goop on my chest, and he looks at me for like 5 minutes, cleans me off, says, go get your kids and get back here. I need 2 hours. You've got a big problem.
Oh my God.
He said, all the nurses here will watch your kids. And I said, their toddlers are like 1 in 4. So they were like hellions, you know, that was terrible age to have like nurse. She's like, the nurses will watch your kids. I need 2 hours. They're going to have to hang out in the lobby. I was like, oh, okay. So I went and got my kids. By the way, Bryden's on a business trip by this point in Minnesota. So he wasn't there to help me.
A business trip. That's when things happen.
Mm-hmm. So my brother did happen to live down the street from our house. So he lived in he worked downtown Denver. So I was calling him like frantically as my cell phone's dying. Saying, can you please come to this place? Because these people tell me they're going to watch my toddlers and I don't really believe that anyone can watch them besides me or my family. So, you know, whatever. So anyway, I came back, he put the goop back on. He went back to looking at me like I screwed up their entire schedule for the evening because of this and whatever. Turns out I had a 22 millimeter hole in my heart the size of a quarter, So the top two chambers of my heart were wide open. I was born with it. And basically the left side of my heart, because the pressure was all off, basically one side is oxygenated and one side's non-oxygenated. So when they look at the echocardiogram, it goes, the red and the blue just would swirl together.
Oh no.
So I had about, Yeah, I had about half the oxygen as a normal human because it never would go through my body correctly. So I never was fully oxygenated, you know? So, and then the left side of my heart, because the pressure was so off, was ballooning out like a bubble. And what was going to happen was it was just going to rupture. Like the lining in my heart was just going to break. And when that happened, I would have been a goner. So
immediate.
Yes. So that was crazy. And so Bryden came back from his business trip the next day, all good. Not all good, but then they got us with a surgeon cardiologist within a week. His name's Dr. McDonald from South Denver Cardiology. He's amazing. He's actually the director or something over there now. Like now he's the top doctor over there. So that's, and it's a huge place. It's right over by South Park, if you know that area. But anyway, he saw me in a week, and he's also a doctor that you can't get to see him without like a 6 month appointment. Like, but he saw my case and he was like, you need to get in here now. And so he had me scheduled for surgery by the 3 weeks later from that date. So I found out November 1st, the dates actually matter. So I'm going to tell you this. Found out November 1st, my surgery was supposed to be December 4th. That's how quickly this all was coming down the pipeline. All of my kids, or at least my two that were born at the time, are all July babies. I always find out in November I'm pregnant. So all November, I kept telling my husband and the doc, the cardiologist, that I felt like I was pregnant. I kept peeing on a stick. It said, nope, not pregnant. The week before, it said finally pregnant. I had probably gotten pregnant right before I found out with Neil. So So they had to stop my surgery. Couldn't have my surgery.
Were you on any special meds to?
No meds.
So you're really a ticking time bomb.
I'm a ticking time bomb. I've got it. And I still have a 1-year-old and 4-year-old.
Which puts.
Yes.
Being pregnant.
Yeah. Because then you have double the blood, all that stuff, you know, you're double whatever. So then it was like, what do you do? So then, my OBGYN got involved and I had to go to the high-risk baby doctor, not because Neil was high-risk, but because I was. And they had to determine what to do. I even had to go to, I did end up going and talking to people at Planned Parenthood, to be honest, too, because again, it was, again, going back to, do I want my two that are living, like it was it's the ultimate decision of, do I want my two that are living to have no mother, potentially, if something goes really, really wrong, or do I want to fight for their sibling to come? And, you know, and at the time we were Catholic, Bryden was Catholic. So I was Catholic too. So that Bryden was definitely against it. But I was like, you know what, it's my body. I'm going to decide which way we go, whether it breaks our family up or not, I'll figure it out. Ultimately, the cardiologist said to me, you've had two pregnancies and nothing. And you had this problem the whole time. He said, nobody knows how bad your heart was during those two pregnancies. So I think I can get you through a third and maybe you'll end up on bed rest, but like, we'll get you through it. And, I'll just see you every month and now we have a baseline on your heart. We know what your heart looks like now. If there's a problem, we'll figure out if we need to put you on bed rest to kind of keep your heart from being too strained. So every month I would see my OBGYN, who would do an ultrasound on my baby. Then I'd go see the cardiologist, who would do an ultrasound on my heart. And so we just kind of watched it throughout the process. And
how long, honestly, were those months? Like how long was that?
Oh, it was so long. It felt like an eternity every single month waiting for the next appointment to make sure everything was okay. And there was one time I remember I was at, do you remember the Big Lots? There used to be Big Lots everywhere.
Yes.
It's like, I don't know. They're not really around much anymore, but there was a Big Lots across the street from where my current office is now. But, I was shopping with my 2-year-old at the time and I had a huge heart palpitation that lasted, I don't know, maybe a minute. It put me on the floor and I had Tim with me. And I just remember watching Tim pull stuff off the shelf, running around mad, like 2-year-olds do. And me being like on the ground, sitting down, with my heart palpitating to the point that I could, like, you get really dizzy and spinny and it's really, you can feel it in your chest. It's a weird feeling, but I couldn't even get to him to like, be like, you know, let me keep you from destroying this place. I don't know, but I.
So let me just clear this up. Your concern in this moment was that your son was making a mess of this store, and not that you're about to die.
I think it was both. I think it was more like, there's nobody, like, how are they going to find Brian if something happens? Like, he's two, he can't even speak very well yet. You're like, who's going to take this child? Well, he wasn't even two, actually, because he would have been like 1.5. So like, yeah, it was more like, oh my God, somebody could take him right now and take him away. And like, I could die on the floor here and nobody would even know that he was with me. You know, like, I don't know. It was just really morbid, I guess. I don't know. It's just weird. So you're like
having this flash forward of all of the horrible things that are happening, right? Like that could possibly.
And then,
happen.
You know, the anxiety is probably making my palpitation go faster. Right. So it was like that. That was when I was like, okay, I'm not going shopping with the kids alone. Like, this is too much. At the third trimester, I did get put on what's called modified bed rest. So I wasn't allowed to do laundry or clean the house or, you know, put the kids in and out of the car seat. Bryden had to do those. I just had to, like, you know, try to sit down as much as possible and whatnot.
How did that work with Bryden going to work? You're basically not able to work as you were before, even though you can do a lot of your job over the phone. But
so, yeah, I was still doing all the work because I could just sit in like a recliner and do my work. And, you know, we put the kids in daycare and stuff during the day, so they were away from me most of the time during the week. And then he was home on the weekends, so he'd just help with getting them to and from daycare. And then he'd do laundry and I'd kind of dictate some stuff. And I had to kind of let go of some things that I would normally be on top of a little more, but we got through it. And then Neil came July 15th.
What was his
and then
due date?
July 13th.
Went full term.
Yeah, he did go full term. So yeah, they were never concerned about him going full term or me. It was more about, or me carrying him full term. It was more about like, would my heart be able to handle him full term? So that was more like it might've been a sudden end to both of us if something happened. So that was kind of the thing. But yeah, they got me through it. I had normal vaginal delivery. In fact, the heart doctor did not want me to have a C-section because of the blood loss. Like, he was more concerned about how much blood loss I'd have and how that would be harder on my heart and could be worse for me. So everyone always says that you probably had a C-section. And I'm like, no. Actually, he didn't. He was like, if you can do it vaginally, still do it vaginally, because I don't want to deal with the blood loss and that kind of thing happening with you. So all three kids, I did have to wear oxygen and my heart rate would drop and their heart rate would drop down to like the 30s and 40s. Like, it was really low, but like, no one ever knew with the first two why I was doing that. So they just come in and put oxygen on me and flip me over and like, oh, sometimes that happens or whatever. And so I remember with one of the other two kids, I got the epidural, and I remember laying, you know, you got to sit up and lay forward. I don't know if you had one. Assuming you
did.
Yeah. Oh, I was like, I'm sure you did. I know. Oh, I know. Unless you came too quick or something. I don't know. You know, so or some people don't want one. So good for them too. But I'm like, give it to me. That's not me either. Hey, no judgment for me. I totally just do not want the pain. That's not worth it. But I remember sitting up and then, you know, you lean forward to get an epidural. And I just remember getting so lightheaded. I almost passed out and threw up. And I remember that the doctor, whatever, the anesthesiologist is doing it. And he had the worst bedside manners. And he was like, sit, you need to hold still. And I'm just like ready to vomit and like pass out right then. And I'm like, you need to hurry up.
Have you worked on pregnant in labor women before, sir? Have you?
How's this not the contraction. I'm about to be sick here. And like,
regardless, come on.
Oh God, it was terrible. So I remember thinking, what a jerk. I just want to punch you in the face. So anyway, that was fun. But yeah. So, all turned out well with Neil. He turned out fine. He was 7 pounds, 13 ounces. He turned out to be my biggest kid. Smallest kid right now, but biggest kid that, you know, came out. So, and I'm sure that was from just being on the bed rest and getting more relaxation at the end and trying not to overdo it to the very end. So kind of crazy, but yeah. And then, so he was born, and then 6 weeks later, they didn't need to wait for me to heal up from the birth. And then 6 weeks later, I was leaving my baby. I was nursing at the time too, leaving my baby and my toddlers with my dad. So 5, 2, and oh yeah. And Olivia was starting kindergarten, by the way. So, kindergarten, 2 and 0, and leaving them with my dad. My mom had just got done with breast cancer, and she had no feeling in her fingertips and her toes from all the chemo. It like kills all your nerves. And so she couldn't help out with them because she was scared she'd drop the baby or whatever. She could barely walk. Like she could walk, but she'd trip and stuff because of the numbness or whatever. So she didn't want to. So my dad took care of all the kids. So that was crazy. So I left him with 2 days and him getting her to kindergarten and dealing with the brand new baby that's waking up every hour.
You weren't there for the first day of your oldest
daughter. Well, I was there for that. No, she went to that, but like, cause it happened. My surgery happened, the 24th, I think, of September. So she started like around the 8th or 10th. And so she was, yeah, I did take her the first day of kindergarten, but she'd only been in for a few weeks. And so it was still very new to our world, you know? Let's see. I'll tell you, I guess it doesn't really matter the exact date, but the 27th is of August was the date. So it was only late because we started what, the 10th or something of usually start around the 10th of August. So only 2 weeks into school. I did go tell her teacher, this is hopefully your teacher doesn't listen to this one day, but I did go tell her teacher that what was going on with her family and that this was going to be happening. And it's kind of traumatic. And I didn't know who's picking up the kid, her from school. And I just wanted him to know, I think it was my dad, he could look really lost. And he's got two other kids he's toting behind him or probably in a stroller. And like, I need you to like, be aware that he might look like he's struggling. So could you help me? And I remember her going, this is like, my surgery is like the next, like that next week. And I'm telling her, so she knows. And she goes, I've been meaning to tell you, I had to talk about your daughter anyway. She doesn't know her ABCs or 1, 2, 3s or all this. And we're actually pretty concerned about her. And I went, what? This kid has been in preschool and kindergarten, or not kindergarten, preschool and daycare her whole life. She knows all this stuff. Like, this has been drilled into her head. What is happening?
I just told you a traumatic situation happening in our family. And it's possible that maybe she's not learning very well right now because her mom is going into a life-threatening surgery.
Yes, and she knows all about this, and she has a new brother, and like her world's been rocked, right? So I'm like, what is happening? Well, come to find out the teacher had the wrong kid. So like she emails me Monday, like, I'm sorry, I had the wrong kid, as I'm at home all weekend, like flashcarding her. Going, I'm going into surgery. I need you to know this stuff.
Mommy don't might die. I need like you don't to know your ABCs before I die. This is important, sweetheart. It's ridiculous what moms do
this
sometimes.
This is basics. And it was the wrong kid. And she's like, I didn't, I told her I knew my stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. Never mind. Sorry.
One more thing. Thank you, lady. Thank you.
Yeah, so that's my crazy story. And really, if I wasn't watching a TV show that Saturday or that Sunday night, and it would have never come out this.
And who knows when that would have ruptured.
Right. Yeah, I was 34, and he said there was no way I would have made it till 40. Is the cardiologist? He had a longer timeline than other doctors, but he said there was no way I would have made it till 40. And possibly I was on the verge of having permanent heart damage. So the cool thing about your heart is it's repairable and it's a muscle and you can build it back up. So once they put a metal mesh device through my leg, it was like 4-hour surgery. By the way, you're awake for heart surgery. It's kind of like brain surgery. It's kind of weird.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, you're kind of, I mean, they put you in this weird trance thing, but like, there's a few times I remember waking up like from that little trance thing that they had me in and being like, what is happening? But they shoved like a little metal mesh, like the size of like maybe inch and a half, whatever, because it was the size of a quarter, so like an inch, up through my vein in my leg, up into my heart. And then they shoved another one up and then they screw them together. And then they put it into the lining so it like locks into the wall where I should have made tissue. My body should have put a wall there, but it never did when I was born. It was like in utero, basically in utero, my body didn't create the fourth chamber.
Well, our middle daughter was born with a heart murmur and they made us go to get, have her, have the ultrasound on her heart.
Echocardiogram?
Yeah. And yes. She, that's exactly what she had. And they said 90% of the time they close on their own. But so we went and spent the astronomical non-covered by insurance amount. I think it was $3,000 each time to get her heart, the echocardiogram. And by the second time we did it, he said, it's on the way of closing. I think you're fine. So you're the 10% where that didn't close.
Yeah, I am. Yes, exactly. Correct. So
is that the same type of thing where like kids that are doing sports will just have sudden cardiac arrest?
Yeah. So I now also run Kids Heart Challenge at the kids' school. So when your kids do that program, I don't know if they do that at your school, but most schools do it. It's through the American Heart Association, but it's for kids who are, the 30% of kids are born with a heart defect. So 1 in 3 of your kids had one. So it makes sense, you know, like 30%.
One of my 30 had one.
Yeah. So the 30% are born. Most will heal on their own. Then the 10% won't. And I'm part of the 10% that won't. But mine was such a big hole. And the reason why the doctors missed it for so many years, first of all my health records looked good. Like everything I was like 120 pound kid growing up, you know, through high school. And like, you know, just, I don't know. I just, everything looked good on paper, you know, no flags there. But the other piece of that was, if you think of a tube and you think of a water pressure in a tube and, you know, it's open, if you had like a cover on it and there was a pinhole, the pinhole is going to make a lot more noise. If you have it all the way open and no pinhole, there's no noise. It just flows. And so doctors just couldn't hear it because mine just flowed. Mm-hmm. And there was no pressure to make that sound that they're looking for when they're listening to your heart.
Wow. So what do you do? Crazy. Like, have you had your kids checked?
And I checked all three of them. Yep. I did.
With echocardiogram.
Yeah. Yeah. I had all three of them checked. Neil was checked in utero, like right before he was born. So they did check him fully on that. And so they said he was fine. And specifically they were looking for that on him. But the other two, I did take them two children to have a full echocardiogram done. But my heart doctor was like the whole time going, this is not a genetic thing. This is just a birth defect. So
tell a mom congenital. That, and then we'll be like
congenital. Sure, but sure, I'm like, I can't sleep not knowing if my kids have the same problem. Right. So
I would have done the same.
So So it just was like a peace of mind thing to make sure there was nothing else wrong. And so, but you know, I think I always complained growing up. Like when I was in high school, I would drink. So I would take drive my car to the gas station and I'd buy a 12 pack of 20 ounce Mountain Dews. I drink one on the way to school. I drink one at 10 o'clock. I drink one at noon. I drink one at 3 o'clock. I drink one at 6 o'clock. And then I went right to bed.
What?
Because I was so tired all the time. I was so exhausted. I'd fall asleep in classes all the time. Like I couldn't keep my eyes open. I was like the kid who was constantly, I slept like 8 to 10 hours at night. I'd go straight to bed when I got like after dinner. I was like the kid that was like, I'm going to bed. I'll read a book in bed, but I'd be like, I'm exhausted. I'm going to go lay down. My parents would have to like pull the covers off of me, dump water on me, turn my radio up, put the lights on, trying to get me to wake up for school in the morning. Cause I was that kid that was just so exhausted. I couldn't run 100 yards without being fully out of breath and exhausted. So I, yeah, I was, now I look back and I'm like, oh, the only class I ever failed and not failed, I got a D twice in high school was PE. I hated PE. Like the whole idea of exercising and doing that was just miserable. So I ditched class all the time in high school because I was like, I'm not going to PE. I hate PE. And so, I look back and I'm like, if only my, oh, and then band, I was in band. I played a woodwind instrument, a really big clarinet called an E flat contralto clarinet. And it's huge. It's taller than me. And so you're a music girl, so you would know, maybe no, maybe you wouldn't know.
Stand up clarinets. You get a stand up.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. Yeah. It's like the one that like.
With the teeny tiny, yeah. With the teeny tiny thing coming out.
No, that's a oboe.
Oh, okay.
This is a, close. This one has a huge one and has like a reed that's like, I'm showing you, you're not going to see, but maybe like
you were able to play
2 to 3 inches.
And not
I was, out. But you know, what's funny is I always got dinged in band for not being able to breathe at the right time. So I remember playing and like, you know how you're supposed to play till you hit the breath spot, like the break the or whatever.
Singing. It's the same with singing.
Yes. I could not make it to that. Didn't matter how much I practiced, didn't matter how much I tried. My band teacher was always on me for breathing at the wrong time. And I want to go back and be like, Casey Kropp,
look. Look at this, sir. I almost died.
I couldn't breathe. So there you have it.
How
so,
did nobody catch it on an O2 monitor? Like your O2 was normal?
Because my O2 was normal. So, I mean, I still, that never was low. So, I still had all the oxygen. It's just, I was burning through the oxygen faster, I think, than other, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know, but I, than other,
you
but
know
yeah.
Your situation, you know, your situation.
I know my situation. My pulse was always fine. My O2 was always fine. And like, if you listen to my heart, it sounded pretty okay. So like every now and then they'd be like, I kind of hear something. And then it'd be like, oh, maybe not. I didn't hear that. It wasn't that big a deal, whatever that was. So
Amy, that show saved your life.
That show saved my life. So it's my God moment.
And your motherhood anxiety saved your life. I mean, how many women can say that?
Right. I don't know.
Their motherhood anxiety saved their life for once. And you said a crazy thing.
True. To doctor, I never looked at that.
And that doctor listened to you and you saved your life.
Can you? I know. I look back and I'm like, what if they didn't listen to me and I just dropped, keeled over dead in front of my children.
So what this means is moms, any of all of you hypochondriac moms, it gets okay. Just tell your doctor.
Totally. And I also I tell moms all the time to go take care of you, especially when it comes to your medical. If you think there's a medical problem, go get it checked out, check it off. Because the reason that mom died in the show and probably why I might've died eventually is because she wasn't willing to take care of herself and get herself checked out. So she just told her husband and her mother about it. Her mother in the show said that she defended the husband too. Sorry, I was like, can't talk. So in the court case, she also was, you know, a witness saying my daughter was having all these weird things happen to her. And, you know, we don't know what happened, but her medically, she, something was going on and she just didn't have time because she had 2 toddlers and she was just completely ignoring her own body and her own body telling her what was going on. So
how did this change you as a parent from before knowing about the heart issue to after? How does this, did that change your perspective on life, on being a mother, on how you live your life?
I think it changed my perspective as in I'm going to always do everything I can with the kids or with myself, like immediately. I was already partnered with somebody for my insurance agency and I was partnered with the guy, but I was kind of just doing, I was part-time, really part-timing my job and like, wasn't going to take it to the next level ever. And probably would have stayed in this partnership that wasn't going to ever be beneficial to me. I think it changed where I was like, you know what, I'm going to transition. I'm going to start my own agency. And then I'm going to do things like volunteer for the kids. And I'm going to be a participant in their life more than I probably ever was. We make health a priority as far as like activities. Like, the kids complain about it, but it's like, you need to be healthy. You need to get out. And, you know, I'm always like, I've had your heart checked. I've had other things checked. You guys are fine. You can do this. You need to push yourself.
Like, I know you can run in PE. Okay. I know you can.
Right. And so I'm like, you don't have the same problem as me. And I was like, well, you didn't do it. I'm like, well, I know, but now you know why. And I've already checked you out. So you have no excuse. So like, but you need to push yourself too. Like, I think it just changed me in the fact that I am more willing. I have more energy. I have more, I run circles around my family now than I ever have before. So in fact, Bryden could tell a difference between who I was then and who I am now. He'll tell you that I was, definitely I'm more energy than he knows what to do with sometimes. So,
yeah. What is giving you grace right now in your life today?
Probably just that my kids are healthy and happy for the most part and growing, and that I'm here and that we're all still a unit, and, you know, tragedy could strike at any time or could not. And I'm happy we're all in a place where we all feel very comfortable and, you know, open with each other, sometimes too open. But
that's why we're friends, Amy.
That's why we're friends. Yeah, exactly. So.
Thank you so much to Amy Stanton for sharing her story with us. Amy runs her own insurance agency out of Denver, Colorado. You can find out more information about this podcast, including the show notes, on my website at SheilaKChester.com/grace. Thank you so much for listening to Raising Grace Podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. And as a reminder, I am not a parenting expert, and neither are my guests. Don't forget to give yourself and others just a little bit of grace today. Thank you.